On today's show, I'll tell you why DJ LeMahieu will regress in 2021. I'll give you a major sleeper to target in your drafts. Plus, I share my interviews with Brewers reporter Will Salmon and Reds reporter Bobby Nightingale. That's today on Fastball Fantasy Baseball. I'm Taylor Tarter, and this is Fastball Fantasy Baseball. Let's get into it. So we just saw what is likely to be one of the bigger deals of this offseason. Toronto signed their guy, George Springer, to a six-year, $150 million contract. Springer had a decent 2020 season when a lot of other batters did not. He, you know, really is just kind of a solid batter. He's got a solid walk rate, solid strikeout rate, solid on-base percentage, pretty consistently solid BABIP, although that was down last season. However, he does have his flaws. He doesn't really hit the ball exceptionally hard. His hard contact rate went above 40% for the first and only time in his career in 2019 when we saw him hit 39 home runs. I think that is a bit of an anomaly because he is eerily very consistent, like too consistent. Like all his percentages for line drives, ground balls, and fly balls fluctuate maybe 4 or 5% over his career. It's the same for his contact rate with pitches in and out of the zone, his swinging strike rate, and his first pitch strike rate. So basically, when you look at his underlying stats, you really can see when something is off somewhere, if something is legit or not, and if any issues are going to self-correct. All that being said, he's a solid option at outfield. You know, obviously, he's been for a while. He's going to be in the heart of a really good young lineup for a while, possibly batting first or second in some combination with Kevin Biggio. Now, this does not make him, you know, one of the top, let's say, five outfielders off the board, but I think he should start the season in consideration for top 40 or 50 players overall, meaning in most leagues, you know, he's going to be a 4 or 5 round pick. You know, obviously in deeper leagues, he'll probably go a little earlier. Shallower leagues, he'll go a little later. I just don't think you should go into 2021 expecting another 40-ish home runs, you know, a near 40 home run season. But he is going to a division with a lot of hitter-friendly ballparks. I think a mid-30s home run season is realistic. 270, 275 average, 100-plus runs, which makes him a top 15, you know, working his way into the top 10 as far as an outfielder. An interesting thing here is that Toronto Star reporter Laura Armstrong thinks there may be more outfield moves to come in Toronto. She sees the outfield alignment with Grichuk on the bench, or maybe on the move. Kyle Schwarber is another big signing that happened recently. He was signed by the Nationals on a one-year deal worth $10 million. Now, there's a little bit of, you know, there's more intricacies with that deal, but that's not what matters for us. The Nats had been linked to him, Brantley, and Jock Peterson prior to the signing, and presumably they're done with their major outfield ads. There may be room for a platoon bat, but that role might get filled by Josh Harrison, who's sort of the Nationals' super utility guy. Fourth outfielder is likely to be Andrew Stevenson, who got some consistent playing time for the first time in 2020 and could be pretty good. That alignment in the outfield really depends on whether or not the National League has a designated hitter, because if that's the case, you likely see Stevenson getting time as the full-time left fielder with Schwarber filling that DH role. If not, you know, if there is no designated hitter in the National League, then Schwarber is the everyday left fielder moving Juan Soto to right field. So what does Schwarber bring to the table for the Nationals? Well, he had an awful 2020 campaign, but I really expect his power to play well in Washington. Nats Park is pretty consistently a good hitter's park. You gotta like what power lefties have done there. Soto, Harper, Adam Dunn, Adam LaRoche. Right? He'll be likely batting behind Soto and Josh Bellard. Maybe between them, maybe in front of them. Either way, he'll have chances to see good pitches and to pick up walks. And, you know, he does walk. He's got a really nice 13% walk rate over his career. He gets on base at a pretty good clip. I like the hard contact rate. I will say one knock against him was in 2020 was a 50% ground ball rate, which was 10% more than what he averages. So I think if the Nats can get him to put more balls in the air, get some more consistent contact, some more consistent hard contact, you could be looking at a pretty solid sleeper bat. There is risk because of the batting average, but you know, he has potential for 30 plus home runs. And so he could be a really, you know, solid late round add, especially if we see the designated hitter in the National League. The Nationals also just signed John Lester to a 1 year deal. I like the Lester signing more for the kind of leadership and the clubhouse culture he'll bring to the team than any sort of fantasy impact. Now, a lot of people are going to point to John Lester's 2020 and say he was a bad pitcher, right? And on the surface, yes, over a 5 ERA, not great. But in his final four starts of 2020, he had a 106 ERA. Now, you got to think if the season had gone on, that ERA evens out a bit. Maybe he gets it kind of into the low fours. We're projecting a little bit, but you know, he probably could have been a better pitcher had the season gone on a little longer. You know, he's not going to strike out a ton of people. He's never been like a big strikeout guy, but one thing that kind of points to a little bit of why he's kind of had a downward turn in strikeouts and why maybe last year wasn't so great was that he threw fewer fastballs and curveballs and way more sinkers and changeups last season. And those numbers were the exact opposites in 2018, 2016, and 2014 when he had really solid years. So I'm just wondering if the Nats pitching staff will notice those things and kind of put him on the right path again, you know, with pitch selection. I do think he's going to be solid. He doesn't have to anchor the rotation. You know, they already have Scherzer, Corbin, Strasburg there. Joe Ross is probably going to round out the rotation. But I do think he's going to be valuable in terms of quality starts and wins. You know, he'll probably be a nice late pickup in deep leagues and ML only leagues. But in most leagues, I would think he's more of a waiver ad. Corey Kluber is finalizing a deal with the Yankees. Probably by the time this comes out, the deal will be done. It's a 1 year, $11 million deal, basically a show me contract. So he'll be, you know, hopefully he'll perform well and be a free agent again and make some more money next year. 2018 was the last season where Corey Kluber pitched a full year, and he did really well. I think it's realistic that a healthy Kluber gets back to at least somewhat of his previous form. He consistently sits around 9.5 strikeouts per nine. He doesn't walk too many batters. He limits home runs, induces a solid 44% ground ball rate. Some might be concerned about the velocity he showed in his workout. His fastball sat around like 88 miles per hour, but I expect that to kind of ramp up by the time the season starts. He wasn't a hard thrower in the first place, anyways. The last few years, his fastball was around 92 miles per hour. I think he's going to be kind of overlooked in a lot of leagues because of that, and that's good for you. You could be getting a really solid pitcher late in drafts. My suggestion is do some mock drafts, pay attention to the value, and see where he's getting drafted so you know where other people are valuing him. Liam Hendricks was somewhat surprisingly signed by the White Sox, cementing them as one of the top teams in the American League. He signed a 4 year deal with an opt out after the 3rd year. He maintains value as one of, if not the top closer in baseball. The last 2 seasons, he's been sensational. I think it's likely we see his ERA go up a bit in 2021. He benefited from a lower than usual walk rate, BABIP, and home run to fly ball rate in 2020, but he has sustained a 13 strikeout per nine rate the last 2 seasons, and I think that he will maintain going into 2020, and that's what makes him really valuable. Finally, DJ LeMahieu is re-signing with the Yankees for 6 years and $90 million. There were a lot of teams courting him, but he goes back to New York. Last season's 364 average was buoyed by a hefty 370 BABIP and definitely was a product of small sample size. I would not expect that in 2021. Now, he is a consistent, you know, right about 300 hitter. He seems to have found a bit of power in New York, but though, you know, I'm kind of skeptical of that. I'd expect the batting average to come back to earth. The batted ball numbers scare me a little bit with him. He has below average hard contact rate, a high ground ball rate, and his 2019 and 2020 home run to fly ball rate were much higher than usual for him, which means he had more fly balls turn into home runs than normal. Now, on the other hand, right, the positives, he's multiple position eligible, with which adds value. You know, in points leagues, he's very valuable. And, you know, he might be the first second baseman off the board in a lot of leagues. Although, I will say I wouldn't be surprised to see Albies or Hira overtake him for the top second baseman as the season progresses. He's a top 10 third base, top 15 at first base, so you know, it's hard to go wrong with him on your roster. Now, he's not a player that I target usually. I just think people value him as this, you know, high 300s hitter with you know, good pop. But I don't think that is who he really is. Now, if he falls to me in a good spot, I'll take him. But I am not going to go into the season targeting him all that much. I'm not going to reach for him. Now, there is also a three-team trade this week, so let's take a quick look at that.
Deal or no deal?
So the most significant names in the deal were Joe Musgrove heading to San Diego and Joey Lucchese going to the Mets. To me, Lucchese is a waiver wire pickup and like a streamer at best. He's been a bit of a mixed bag, going from 10 strikeouts per nine in 2018 to 8 strikeouts per nine in 2019 to 7 last season. And, you know, he only started 5 games. Seems like he's probably going to figure into that, you know, fifth starter in the Mets rotation. He'll figure into that role. You know, I'm sure there's going to be a little bit of a competition there. But, you know, when Syndergaard comes back, he's probably going to be one of the candidates for demotion. So that's kind of something to consider too. Joe Musgrove, on the other hand, he went to San Diego, and I like him a lot there. In 8 games in 2020, he looked excellent, getting his strikeouts per nine up to 12. Now, the fact that his home run to fly ball ratio was higher than usual means that he probably could have done even better last year. He was just unlucky with how many fly balls turned into home runs. He induced more ground balls and more medium contact than in his previous 4 seasons, which definitely helped keep the ERA down. And, you know, having a nice defense behind him in San Diego will help with that also. Now, you know, a lot of people are going to argue that, hey, this could be a fluke, right? But I'm going to tell you why it's not, right? There's a tangible thing that he did that attributed to these things. And what he did was he threw more curveballs, twice as many curveballs last season than in any of his previous seasons. And in doing that, right, he created more strikeouts and more ground balls and weaker contact than he has ever had before. That is actually something he can go into 2021 and replicate. And, you know, that's going to make him successful. I think he could be a huge, huge pitching sleeper going into 2021. I think people are going to look at him as, you know, like a 4 ERA guy, you know, the Pittsburgh guy, but he had terrible run support in Pittsburgh. You know, it's not a great pitcher's park. So I think he becomes extremely valuable and very good in San Diego. In a moment, I am going to share my interviews with Brewers reporter Will Salmon and Reds reporter Bobby Nightingale right after a word from my sponsor. Joining me today is Will Salmon, who covers the Brewers for The Athletic. You can also listen to his and Derek Van Riper's Section 422 podcast covering the Brewers throughout the season. Will, thanks for joining me.
Oh, anytime. I'm looking forward to chatting with you. Thanks for having me.
So the Brewers have been pretty quiet this offseason. Is this like a financial situation sort of thing that's, you know, holding them back from signing? Is the team waiting out the market, or is it just that they feel kind of comfortable with what they have?
Yeah, it's a combination of a couple of things. And I think first at the top, you alluded to it there with the financial situation that they're in. I understand a lot of people listening to this will say, well, look, you know, they're owned by somebody with a lot of money, and Mark Antanasio and others, and they could end on a free agent here and there. And that's absolutely true. They could, but they also lost some money that they expected to get as far as revenue and ticket sales last year.
Right.
And the Milwaukee Brewers really rely on that more than other teams do in baseball. And part of that's because they don't have the sort of lucrative deal as far as media and TV goes as some other teams do in comparison. And their gate is usually pretty good. As far as recent history goes, they're one of the top teams in attendance year after year. So they have a very loyal fan base that cares a lot, and they show up. And that fan base, again, like I mentioned earlier, they will point out that, hey, they should still spend here and there. And they could still do that. So it's that. David Stearns, their president of baseball operations, mentioned right after the season in his sort of first press conference via Zoom, I guess, of the offseason, saying that, hey, we pretty much set records as far as payroll goes the last couple of years. And he all but said that certainly won't happen this year. You know, right. It's kind of like he kind of left that at the doorstep, and by pointing that out was using that as an example. And if you look back and you see their offseason, it's sort of paints a picture that they're not going to come anywhere close to that this year. Now, they could still add a free agent here and there, and they probably should. If you look at their offense last year, it wasn't very good. That said, another thing that you mentioned there at the top was they do feel pretty solid about what they have. They thought last year that they had a pretty solid team, a team that can compete, and they still look at their roster that way. And it's hard not to blame them for that when you have Christian Yelich and you have a pretty good group of guys around him. Sure, they could stand to add to that, especially offensively. But in that group that I mentioned, I'm more so alluding to their pitching staff, which is pretty solid. Right. And especially if you look at their division, it's up for grabs. And so by not really adding anything, they also didn't subtract much. And they're staying pretty much status quo as of this recording. And right now they're probably in position to be the top team in the division, as weird and silly as that may sound.
So I kind of want to get into that pitching, the pitching rotation a little bit. So what are your thoughts on the starting rotation going into the season? It looks like, you know, Woodruff from Burns look like they're co-aces. There's, you know, Eric Lauer, Adrian Hauser, young pitchers who look pretty good. Do you think, you know, Lindblom goes into the season as a pit starter? Does the team add another arm to kind of throw in there?
Sure. I think that their one and two are really, really good. There's no debate there with Brandon Woodruff and Corbin Burns. Both of those guys, you know, if I was making, say, a fantasy baseball list, those two guys would be at the top 25 for me, top 30. Oh, yeah. And, you know, I think Brandon Woodruff is at the point in his career now where he could really solidify himself as one of the better arms in the National League. If he hasn't done that already, I think he could really vault into that sort of Cy Young candidacy type of conversation. And he could have been there too last year. And the guy that was for the Brewers was Corbin Burns, who I believe finished fifth in the balloting. And that came out of nowhere, and to some extent because of the poor season he had in 2019. Mm-hmm. But although I would suggest there would be some regression just because that seems normal as far as numbers go. We also haven't really seen him utilize his full repertoire over the course of a real season or a full season, because he was only a starter for a handful of starts. And so he really wasn't incorporating all of his pitches, and we just haven't really seen. My point is that there's a lot more to Corbin Burnes, I think, that we haven't really seen yet. And so, sure, I think the numbers could point to some sort of regression. I think that's only natural. But the flip side of that is, you know, maybe we haven't seen the best of him yet. So beyond those two guys, I would imagine that their number three could still be Adrian Hauser, who, again, had a rocky year last year with a ERA over 5. But if you look at his 2019 and 2018, for that matter, although, you know, 2018 was just a handful of games, he still showed some good things while he was there. And then the 2019, though, I mean, he was over 100 innings, ERA under 4, FIP under 4. So you look at his season last year, he wasn't hit all that hard. The average exit velocity wasn't incredible. He wasn't giving up a ton of home runs. It was just that his swing and miss was really down last year. The walks were up too a little bit. You know, he was getting the ground balls that they want him to get, but maybe he was just pitching to a little bit more contact, whether that was by design or just subconsciously. I'm not really sure one way or the other, but that was the way it looked like. And so I think that they'll work with him to get some more swing and miss. I think that they still believe in him, and they're going to still use him as a starting pitcher in their rotation, I would imagine. Filling out the rest of it would be Josh Lindblom is signed to a multi-year deal with this team from Korea. Last year was his first year. I thought that he pitched well in September. He went to the bullpen for a little while, and after that he was really sharp, I thought, in the couple of starts that he had and a couple of games that he pitched in afterward. What he learned there was, hey, I could use maybe 2 or 3 of my pitches instead of 6 in a start. Mm-hmm. And so we saw him a little bit more concise. He was pitching with a little bit more conviction, and he was still getting swing and miss. And I think that was the big surprise from him in 2020, was the amount of swing and miss he got. The strikeouts were higher than I thought many anticipated from him. That could be a thing. I'm not sure. I think it's a small sample size, and we're really not sure about it. But what I like about him is that he's a really smart guy who is, I feel like he's going to figure it out in 2021. I feel like he could be sort of a sleeper guy for people and somebody to keep an eye on, because, you know, the stuff I feel like is there. It's just a matter of knowing which pitches to use in a given outing, as opposed to going with your full repertoire every single time. That's what really hurt him, I felt like. And then beyond that, the fifth option, it could be Eric Lauer. They could try to use Freddy Peralta in that role again. We're really mm-hmm. not sure. And they could also say, hey, let's sign a guy. Brett Anderson was in their rotation last year. He's still a free agent as of this recording. And there very well could be, you know, they could bring him back. They could bring him back, or they could bring somebody like him into their rotation. It's not necessarily something that they need to do. And certainly adding offense is a higher priority, but they could make an argument and say to themselves, look, we can never have too much pitching. Let's add another veteran arm here. Or, like I said, they could go with a combination of Eric Lauer and or Freddy Peralta for that role. We're not sure yet. It'll be an interesting spring training when it comes to their fifth starter, unless they add somebody.
And so in the bullpen, Devin Williams seems to have figured something out last season. He looks special. What was it that kind of helped him turn the corner and perform so well last year? And then did he do something that he can replicate in 2021?
Well, he was flat out dominant. And I thought that the turning point for him really occurred, say, in early 2019 in the minor leagues. And that's when he really started to figure out who he was as a pitcher, became smart about what he had and understanding how good his changeup was, utilizing that. And it's not just the fact that his changeup is one of the best pitches in baseball. He also throws, you know, up, you know, close to 98 miles an hour with that fastball. So we're talking about a huge discrepancy between velocity there, where you have that, you know, changeup and then 10 to 15 miles an hour later is a fastball, or even more than that sometimes. His changeup could be 83. So there's a large difference there, and both are plus pitches. He just knows what he's doing, and the confidence is there. And you know, people will point out to the small sample size and whether or not he could replicate it in 2021. But the thing is that I will counter that with the idea that, you know, this was a guy that was pitching against pretty much the same division or the same teams. I mean, we saw that throughout the year, right? Where the Brewers were playing the National League Central all year, pretty much, right? Or the AL Central. There wasn't like, you know, you're seeing in different teams, different batters. He was seeing a lot of the same guys. And right. They were not figuring him out. I mean, the guy, how many times did he give up a hit in a game? Not very often. And he was striking out, you know, two guys every outing. So I feel like the stuff is still there. It's wipeout stuff. And he also, in the minor leagues, he actually threw a slider as well. And who knows, maybe he'll add that in 2021. I'm not sure. I don't think he needs to right now, but that's just something also to keep in the back of people's minds. I think he's very good. That goes without saying, sure. But I feel like he has the potential to replicate his stuff in 2021 and solidify himself as even further as one of the better back-end relievers in baseball.
And kind of looking ahead again with a different player, does the team go into 2021 with Daniel Vogelbach as the starting first baseman? It's hard to believe. It's hard to believe they'd let someone play there every day who barely hits over the Mendoza line. And then if it's not him, who's there?
Well, their problem is that they don't really have many options as of now at first base. They're sort of expecting, or I feel like they're hoping, with the idea of bringing Daniel Vogel back to the team, they really are looking at the DH, and he's a DH, and he could still be valuable off a bench as a power bat, and it's something that they otherwise wouldn't have. So that's a role that he could fill if there is no DH. But the way that they get the most value out of Daniel Vogelbach is if there's a designated hitter in the National League and he could bat there. And he performed really well with the Brewers while he was on their team. It was only a month of a season for him with the Brewers, but he was really good. He hit a lot of line drives. He took his walks. He got on base. He really stayed within himself. He wasn't pool happy. He was hitting the ball to all fields. There was a lot to like in that month of action for him with the Brewers, so much so that they wanted to bring him back. But the problem is that he cannot be relied on at first base defensively. Right. I just don't see that happening. I don't think the Brewers see that happening. I feel like that's the position where they're going to add externally, because internally, I mean, he's their best option and he's really their only option. I mean, you could talk about the idea of possibly putting Keston Hira there, but that doesn't appear to be in the cards anytime soon. And that just all adds up to the idea that they need somebody else externally to play first base for them.
What's your expectation for Luis Urias in 2021? As a Padres prospect, he was hyped up a lot along with Tatis, but he hasn't panned out nearly as well.
Yeah, no, he had a strange and sort of unfortunate 2020. And obviously that's a line that could be applied to everybody, right? But in the context of baseball and Luis Urias and the Brewers, this was a guy who didn't have any spring training at all. I mean, he was coming off an injury from winter ball, and the first day that he was going to play in a spring training game was the shutdown for spring training. So he never actually got to play in a game for the Brewers in spring training. And then when summer camp rolled around, he was on the COVID list. So he missed summer camp as well. And so he didn't really get that going until a couple of weeks into the season. And by then, I mean, he was already missing reps. So, you know, all that to say is that it was a really weird season for him. And actually, like, once he got rolling, he played fairly well at first, the first couple of weeks, and then he sort of cooled off. And as we know, a short season, once you hit into a slump, that's pretty much it as far as 2020 went. Yeah. So that his numbers are what they are. Going into 2021, the Brewers brought back Orlando Arcia at shortstop, and he was their shortstop every day. But when they made that trade for Luis Urias and Eric Lauer, I mean, they gave up, you know, Davies and Trent Grisham. That was a lot, and it proved to be a lot. But the idea was is that they really liked Luis Urias, and they were going to give him every shot possible to be their shortstop. And, you know, I mentioned all the things that was the reason why that wasn't going to happen at the beginning of the year for him. And this year, I think that he enters spring training battling for Arcia for that shortstop role. He could play some second base and spell Keston here or there. If there's a DH here, it could play could shift over to DH. And we saw that a lot in 2020. And also third base. That's a huge void right now for the Brewers. They do not have a third baseman. Right now on paper, Luis Urias is their third baseman. I suspect that will change just because David Stearns has mentioned a couple of times the need for offense and the fact that they look at third base as a power, you know, as a position of they need offense from. And that's not Luis Urias's calling card necessarily. And I feel like they view him as a natural shortstop. So all that to say, I think he goes into the season, assuming the Brewers add somebody to be their third baseman. I assume that Luis Urias goes into the season battling for that shortstop role, but also seeing plenty of time around the infield at second base and third base.
And I can't ask about the Brewers without asking about Christian Yelich. So looking at his background stats from last season, looked like he grounded out a ton. His hard contact was way down. His strikeout rate was up 10%. His BABIP tanked. Do you think there's a reason for all of that that non-Brewers fans weren't seeing last season? Or do you think it was just basically like bad luck for him last year? And then do you think we see him back in MVP form in 2021?
There was some bad luck there. And there was also the idea that I just feel like he needed more time. You know, that's a great case of if the season was 162 games and if he had the start that he had, I still feel like his numbers would approach a bit more respectable as far as batting average goes and those type of stats. Because if you look at, I mean, his on-base percentage was still pretty much – was still really high. The power was still there. It was just really that – the batting average and the strikeouts. The strikeouts, I feel like, would have subsided a bit. It still would have been a high total because of the amount of times he was striking out early in the season. But that wasn't going to stay. And I say that because, you know, I didn't think he looked all that comfortable, you know, the first few weeks of the season, for whatever reason, maybe just because of abbreviated time to get prepared, start and stop, everything, the COVID protocols, the lack of video in-game adjustments that he can make. There are plenty of things, you know, take your pick, and he's not going to go on. He's not going to, you know, mention those as excuses or reasons, of course. So it's hard to really say. But I would imagine it's a combination of those things. And the support is that, you know, he just really wasn't swinging as much early on in the season. His swing and take rate was, you know, his swing rate was pretty low by his standards. He was taking some pitches that he would normally pretty much crush. You know, these were some pitches that were, you know, getting a lot of plate that he let go. His numbers on some off-speed pitches were down as well. So that also tells me, you know, it kind of points to maybe comfort being an issue at certain points. And yeah, I just feel like if the swing rate was higher, we would have saw a lot more damage because when he was making contact, it was hard contact. It was stuff going out of the park. The exit velocity was really high. So you point to all those underlying statistics that support that theory. And so, you know, all that to say, yeah, I think he'll be fine. I think he'll still be a stud where it's, you know, MVP caliber numbers. I really believe that.
That's good for me. I roster
there you
him.
Go.
I'm in a keeper league. And so that was a little personal question there for me. My last question for you it's kind of a multi-part question. I'm just wondering about some of the top prospects in the Brewers system. If there's a chance we see them in 2021, how you think they'll produce if they do get called up, or if you think we kind of see them further down the road. And so just kind of like looking through, it looks like a lot of the Brewers' top prospects look like they spent, you know, their last minor season in single A, but I just want to get your take on Bryce Terang, Mario Feliciano, and Ethan
Small. Sure, yeah. The Brewers system if you look at any list, they're going to be toward the bottom as far as ranking goes. But most of their top prospects, like you said, whether it's top 10 list, the top 15 list, top 20, whatever, the majority of those guys are probably going to be very young players who are in the lower levels of the minor leagues. A lot of international prospects on the on that list who have really yet to get going in their professional careers. So, yeah, I don't really anticipate, you know, you're not going to see a Keston Hira, for instance, you know, unless something completely goes crazy or something something weird happens. You're not going to see a Keston Hira 2019 season from a Brewers prospect where somebody comes up, lights the world on fire, and here we go. They're just not really ready for that. Bryce Terang, I feel like, needs a season, needs a full season in the higher levels of the minor leagues. He's their top guy. Him and, you know, draft pick Garrett Mitchell from the 2020 draft. They're a couple of years away. I still feel like for Bryce Terang, obviously Terang's a bit further along than Mitchell is. Mitchell just got drafted in 2020. But Terang, I still feel like needs that season in the higher levels, and then we'll go from there. By all indications, he had a great summer at their alternative training site, and that was good to hear because he was, you know, going against quality pitching. You know, not somebody from like say single A that's just trying to make it to the next year, or whatever. You know, he was going against some good arms, and he held his own and looked good from what, everything that I heard, but. Yeah, just a guy who is a couple of years away, maybe biggest impact 2022. I would suggest Ethan Small is somebody that maybe could make an impact in 2021 just because he's a very mature pitcher. He's a guy who was a college pitcher and was a college ace, and he's a little bit older. And so maybe if he gets to pitch in, say, AAA this year and does well, I could see him maybe – say in August or September getting called up, but that's more of a guess. And again, that you know, he could very well still stay in the minor leagues for that, for the whole season too. That's not a sure thing whatsoever. I'm just suggesting that he's a very smart, mature pitcher and not somebody that relies on say like incredible stuff. His stuff is good, but it's not that sort of 100-mile-an-hour fastball and he's going to skyrocket it and this or that. More of a deliberate approach there. And so it could help him. Maybe it could not. We'll see. And then with Mario Feliciano, he was added to the 40-man roster, but I don't suspect he'll play in the major leagues in 2021 at all. It was more so just to protect. It was definitely to protect him from the Rule 5 draft. And gotcha. The Brewers have catchers in Manny Pena and Omar Narvaez, who they're going to roll with and again in 2021. And, you know, Feliciano, he's another guy like Terang who just needs another year in the higher levels of the minor leagues. I like him a lot. He's somebody that has a lot of power, and he worked on his defense, which definitely needed to be worked on. Not to say that it's bad, but it's just that, you know, as a catcher, if you're going to progress through the minor leagues, I feel like you can only go so far with your bat. I mean, they're going to, you know, if you're going to be a catcher and you're going to be, you know, a catcher in the majors, you're going to have to learn how to do a lot of little things. And so for him, it was a big summer in that regard in the alternate training site. And I feel like that was a priority. And even so, his hitting definitely carried, and it's going to carry him into the major leagues. Don't get me wrong, but you know, the defense is worth pointing out just because of the position that he plays. And that may take another year in the minor leagues for them to fully feel comfortable with him there.
All right. Well, thank you very much for sharing your time and your insight.
Oh, anytime. Thanks for having me on.
Next up is Bobby Nightingale, who covers the Cincinnati Reds for the Inquirer. You can read his articles at cincinnati.com. Bobby, thanks for joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So the Reds had a really solid year in 2020, but as the offseason has rolled around, the team's lost a couple of guys who helped them get there. You know, Bauer, DeSclafani, Iglesias, Archie Bradley all leave. There's talks of Suarez, Sonny Gray, Luis Castillo being traded. They've been really quiet in regards to the free agent market. So from the outside, somebody who's not a Reds fan, it kind of looks like the team is sort of tearing down a little bit after a really solid year rather than building on their success. What's your take on what they're doing this offseason?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you take it all in totality, I think it looks a little bit worse than it actually is. I do think, you know, they were instructed to cut payroll a little bit. Just the fact that, you know, they're a smaller market team. I think every team in the National League Central is kind of stuck in the same boat where they're all cutting payroll this offseason. And so I think that was kind of the big thing behind cutting Bradley, trading Raisel Iglesias. I think those were purely salary driven. That's great, some extra payroll. You know, Trevor Bauer, I think they didn't have much of a chance to re-sign anyway, even if they had the money. And then DeSclafani, they were going to let him walk. He was outside of the rotation at the end of the year. And then you see all the trade rumors, and I could see maybe one guy getting traded, whether it's Sonny Gray or Eugenio Suarez. I don't think Luis Castillo will go anywhere. But that's just to get more money to sign a shortstop. I think that's kind of their number one priority, whether it's Marcus Semien or whether that's Didi Gregorius or Andrelton Simmons. I think that's kind of the big part where they're trying to figure out, can we keep all those guys and still sign a shortstop? I think I'm not sure if that's possible. But if they do trade one of those guys, then I think it's easy to see them signing one of those shortstops right afterwards.
And kind of along those kind of trade rumors, what are the chances that you think, let's say, Sonny Gray is with the team by the time the season starts?
I'd still put like 75% Sonny Gray's on the team. Same with Eugenio Suarez, and then probably like 95% for Luis Castillo. Gray and Suarez have bigger contracts than Castillo, so they're the only two that would create extra payroll and actually make sense. And maybe Suarez is probably the most likely, and then Gray, and then Castillo.
Yeah, and I also think it's kind of interesting that Castellanos' name hasn't been really thrown around in trade talks, at least not, you know, as much as everybody else.
Yeah, and I think that's due to he has an opt-out clause at the end of this upcoming season after 2021. So say he has a great year, he's going to go right back to free agency. I think he's only 28 years old. So even if he's a free agent next offseason, he's 29. So that would still make him one of the youngest guys. And that gives him another chance at a big payday. So I think that's probably the biggest thing that kills his trade value is just if you wanted to trade for him, there's no guarantee it'd be more than just a one-year rental.
Right.
If you played well. If you played bad, then you're kind of stuck with a bad contract.
And kind of like looking at the different areas of the team. So right now on MLB.com, looking at the depth chart, they have the rotation listed as Gray, Castillo, Tyler Molly, Wade Miley, and Jeff Hoffman. But you've written that there's potential that Michael Lorenzen could end up in the rotation. How do you think that all kind of shakes out this season?
Yeah, I think the first four you said are correct. I think Castillo and Gray are by far their top two choices. Both guys are kind of number one starter quality. Tyler Malley, I think he kind of had a breakout year last season. They have really high hopes for him. When he was kind of the sixth guy in the rotation last year, and then injuries he's stayed in the rotation because of injuries. But the coaching staff was really high on him. I mean, a lot more than you'd expect for a guy that was supposed to be a sixth starter. So I know there's a lot of high hopes that he'll continue to kind of be a breakout candidate this upcoming season. Wade Miley, he dealt with injuries last year, so he'll be back in the rotation. And then instead of Jeff Hoffman, I mean, I do agree that Michael Lorenzen, I think they're going to give him every chance to win that job. He's ended the season as a starter two of the last 3 years. And he's just a guy as a long reliever. If he's a starter, you might as well take advantage of those innings. He's a guy who's been healthy. He's durable. And he throws, I think, five or six pitches, which for a reliever, most relievers only throw two, maybe three. So that gives him a chance to, you know, stick through the lineups, whether it's lefty heavy lineups or right-handed heavy lineups. I think that gives him a much greater advantage than the other guys that are competing for that fifth starter spot.
And something else that you've written about lately and tweeted about is shortstop, and you kind of mentioned it already, but is there anyone that's kind of on the team's short list in terms of shortstops you're looking at?
Gregorius and Marcus Semien, I think would be, I don't know which one they prefer out of those two, but I think those are the two that they would like to add one of those two. Didi Gregorius, they tried to sign him last offseason, and they just got outbid by the Phillies. And then Marcus Semien, I mean, he's a guy who finished third in the American League MVP voting in 2019. Right now it kind of looks like an outlier, but it showed his ceiling. I mean, if he's as good as he was in 2019, he's one of the best players in baseball. So I think it's one of those two. I can't see them making a big trade for someone just because it's hard to when you're stuck with the payroll they have, it's hard to add a contract to it.
And so one of the kind of big losses of the team was Raisel Iglesias, longtime closer. So who kind of fills that closer role in 2021? It's one of those positions in fantasy baseball where everyone's trying to like find the guy. So who do you think gets the nod there, at least to start the season? And, you know, what kind of leash do they get? Do you see the team doing a closer by committee, that sort of thing?
Yeah, they haven't tipped their hand one way or another if it'll be a committee or one guy. If it is one guy, I think the leader going to spring training will be Amir Garrett, the left-hander. He's vocally said he wants that job. He kind of has the temperament for it. And the thing, he'll compete with like Lucas Sims and TJ Antone. I think those are probably his two biggest competitors. And Lorenzen if he's not in the rotation. But the thing with Antone and Sims is they've been so good in multi-inning roles that I think the team would rather have them against the middle of the orders in the sixth inning, seventh inning, eighth inning, then save them for the ninth inning in a one relief closer where Garrett, he's dominant against lefties, but if they can add another lefty to the bullpen, I think that kind of frees them up to say, we'll save you for the ninth inning.
And so if Amir Garrett is the closer, do you think the team kind of lets him ride? Because there are a lot of good young arms in that bullpen.
Yeah, I mean, I think if he starts the season there, I think they'll give him every chance to stay in that role. I mean, you know, he only has one career save, so it's hard to say that he'll be a guy that has immediate success in there. You know, some guys move to closer and they're just not very good at it. You know, the ninth inning's different. But I do think if he starts the season as closer, I think they'll give him every chance to own the position by himself.
One of the strengths of the team is the outfield, and the outfield situation looks a little crowded. I feel like probably the safest spot, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, is Castellanos in right. But who do you think is going to end up getting most of the at-bats from the center field and left field positions?
Yeah, I mean, that'll be the big thing. If they have a DH, I think they can play everyone as much as they want. Otherwise, center field, I think majority of the time the starter will be Nick Senzel, and then Shogo Akiyama will kind of back him up, and then Jesse Winker will start every day, whether it's left field or DH. I mean, he was their best hitter last season. He's a guy who's shown increasing power. You talk about fantasy purposes. I think he's a guy who's kind of ready to break out. He's been dominant against right-handed hitters. He was the best hitter in baseball for a month last year and then just wasn't very good the other time. But if he's healthy, I think he's one of he's one of those guys that has an elite level that he can get to offensively.
That's good to know. And so my last question for you, that's kind of a multi-part question. So I'm wondering about some of the top prospects in the Red system and if there's a chance that we see them in 2021, how you think they'll produce if they get called up, or if you think we see them further down the road, or you know, you can tell me if I'm missing somebody that you think we might see this season. But it looks like most of the top prospects seem like they're going to be slated for like single A, maybe double A this year. But I do want to get your take on Nick Lodolo, Hunter Green, and Jonathan India.
Yeah, I think of those three, I think Jonathan India has the best chance to get real major league time this year. He's an injury away. I mean, whether it's Mike Moustakas, Eugenio Suarez, he's a guy who's played second and third base in the minor leagues. I'm guessing he'll start in AAA. But he was in the alternate site last year. There's been kind of mixed reviews on him. I mean, he's dealt with some injuries, so he hasn't had the greatest minor league production. But they drafted him high for a reason. And if he's healthy, maybe he has a chance to make a quick impact in the major leagues. I'd be surprised if we see Hunter Green this season in the major leagues. I think they just really want to get him innings. You know, he missed basically all of the 2019 season. And then threw 100 innings total in 2020 through the alternate side and at home, but that's still not in game situations. So I would be – he might start at double A, but I just see – unless he just lights out and they feel comfortable moving him to the bullpen, I think that would be the fastest way he gets to the majors if they're looking for a closer or a late inning guy. And just because of his fastball, they let him do that. And same thing with Nick Lodolo. I think he'll probably be like the seventh or eighth starter on the depth chart, but I think they'd prefer to have him wait a year. I think he's still working on developing a changeup, and that's been one of those things that's held him back. So among those three, I would go India 1, Lodolo 2, Hunter Green 3.
Gotcha. Well, thank you very much for joining me today, Bobby. I really appreciate your time and your insight on the Reds.
Yeah, no problem at all. I'm a longtime fantasy baseball player, so definitely understand.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, take care. Thanks a lot.
Yep, you too.
I want to take a minute to thank my guests again, Bobby Nightingale and Will Salmon. Next week, I'll have on one more reporter to discuss a very active team this offseason. In February, I'll begin a series on draft prep, and I'll be doing a recap of several sabermetrics stats that you can look into as you scout for your coming season, and that you can use to make decisions during the season. So make sure you've subscribed so you're notified when those episodes publish. New episodes out every Wednesday. Finally, please give the show a 5-star rating. Each high rating will move my podcasts up the list on the different podcast platforms when people search for fantasy baseball. So it's something that really helps me out. Follow me on Instagram at FastballFantasyBaseball and on Twitter at FastballPod. And feel free to email the show at FastballFantasyBaseball@gmail.com with any comments, questions, or ideas. Thanks for listening.